Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Pamela Brewer welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk and to this edition of Men's Monday on Mind Talk. Every Monday is the day that we have the opportunity to meet with a man who has agreed to share his journey and his story in the hopes that it will perhaps spark something in you. Today, we've got two men, so we've got a double treat. Let me introduce to you Dr. Eric L. Johnson, who quite frankly has more work experience than anyone under the age of 100 should have. But let me share it with you. He's chief consultant with Strategies to Succeed and on the faculty of Virginia International University. He is a former chief of research publications to the United States Air Force Academy. He was also the director of the Urban Education Program in the School of Education at Drake University. And it goes on and on, but you know, I'm running out of breath. Dr. Johnson, welcome to Mind sure. Talk.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And I think this is our second time doing this.
Yes, it is. But this is sure. my first time meeting your son.
It is.
Akili Uchina.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Tell us a little bit about what's going on in your life these days.
Well, I'm out here in Woodbridge, just finished a book, which I'm happy and excited about, and working with my dad, and I'm a Strategies to Succeed, and I'm ecstatic.
So you are currently in Woodbridge, Virginia?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Now, now let me go back and ask you, Dr. Johnson, in your dedication of your book, you dedicated it to the father you essentially never had.
That's right. Mm.
Yeah. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's it's funny that you asked me about that because I just spent I'm in the middle of a book tour, and I get asked that question probably every time we talk about this book, and it really comes down to the fact that I think lots of men, I mean, we know hundreds of thousands, if not millions of young men, particularly black males, have absentee fathers in their lives. And I think there's a hole created under those circumstances that cannot be resolved. But while I think that is true, I don't think that that provides us with permission to not be our best selves. And so that dedication is in part me publicly participating in the healing process that I think many men have to engage in to be their best selves who have no relationship with their father.
Now, let me ask you this, because you both know that there are all kinds of suppositions as to why it is that there may be absent fathers, particularly in the African-American household. And they typically have to do with negative things. What is your sense, and this is actually a question both to Dr. Johnson and to Akili, what is your sense of how it is that there are potentially so many absent fathers in the African-American households?
Wow, that's an interesting question. I have to be careful because, Dr. Brewer, in my own personal experience, all the men that I know are actually very active in their sons' lives, and they are what I would call model fathers, almost 95% of men that I know. But I'm also aware of the fact that I grew up in Chicago, and I could count the number of present fathers in the three-block radius on one hand. So I'd rather not, I'll let Akili speak for himself, but I'd rather not make any generalizations about why I think fathers are absent, because I think there's a whole host of reasons that include divorce, that include death. I mean, I have cousins who never met their father because my uncles died when they were, you know, 2-3 years old. So I'd rather not make any generalizations about why I think that is, because I think you nailed it when you suggested that the range of reasons is various. But I think that the resulting impact still has to be addressed nonetheless.
Absolutely. Akili, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I'll piggyback on what my dad said. growing up on the south side of Chicago, absentee fatherhood was a common occurrence. But being Dr. Eric Johnson's son and being around him and the men that he kept in his space, I also saw, as he said, fathers who were avidly active in their children's lives. So I see both sides of the spectrum. But as to why that is, I don't think I have that knowledge. But
well, it certainly is broad, and it definitely is complicated. But Dr. Johnson, just in saying that it could be the result of divorce or death, what you do is you open up, I would suspect, some members of the audience thinking, because, again, we know that many people will suggest that the absence has to do with negative things. So,
right. I don't want to act like that doesn't exist, because it does. I just think that in the broader context, I think that there are far more reasons than we like to acknowledge than we often want to acknowledge, because oftentimes we want to engage in the stereotypes.
It's very true. And stereotypes, as painful as they can be, they're often simpler to engage in because you kind of know how to engage with them. You hear about them all the time.
Yeah. But I'll use the one that's most often, that I hear most often, that fathers ask them due to the one reason that so many black males are in prison, and that number is shockingly high given the rates of incarceration in the black community compared to other communities. But having said that, I also know young men whose fathers were in prison who are doing very well, and their relationships with their fathers are happening as well as one could expect. So that stereotype is really complicated on lots of levels. And of course, there's men who have been absent, who've never been to prison, and their father's life, the men in their son's lives have been, who've never been to prison, who've just been absent. I know people like that too. So you raise a very interesting point, and that's why we wrote this book, because we want to open up some conversations about this topic in a way that invites healing.
And actually, I'm glad you mentioned the book, because I probably should share with folks the title of the book, which is Living in the Shade: Implications of Father and Son Relationships Explored. And that's exactly what we're doing today, is exploring father and son relationships. Dr. Johnson, you talk about the impact of your mother's decision to withhold information from you regarding your biological father. And that sadly happens a lot of times, particularly, as you say, if there's a divorce or some sort of separation, regardless of the reason for the separation, the remaining parent, and I think mothers do this more often than fathers, is the one who will give no information. What was that like for you?
Wow. I feel like I need to lay on the couch for that question. No, but seriously, so it's hard for me to explain it, because for most of my life, I thought my brother's father was my dad, so that this issue wasn't, this issue only comes to play for me mostly in my adulthood when I'm aware of who that there is a biological father out there and I don't know who he is. But in terms of in terms of my mother deciding not to talk to me about it, I felt two different things. There was a point in which my life where I made that decision all about me. Like, how could you do this to me? Why would you not? And I've recently written another book called 10 Deadly Aspects of Pride. And now I realize that what my mother did is something I do. She made the best decision what she knew at the time. And I am now fully aware that she made the decision that she made so that she could bring what she perceived to be the least amount of hurt into my life as possible.
And so she
concluded that telling me would do more harm than not telling me.
And I would suspect that most parents who do that for precisely the same reasons.
I tend to agree.
And there may be nobody who agrees with that, but...
No, I think most people do. In fact, I write about this when I actually say about this specific decision you're asking about, I am aware that my mother did the best she could with what she knew, and I end that chapter of the book by saying, I hope to get that same understanding from my own children.
I think Akili has been put on notice.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I think you raise a very complicated issue that I don't want to be set as the exemplar about this, because I think everybody's come at this with their own particular experiences, their own understanding, their own hopes, fears, and dreams. And all those things are playing to understand how we respond to those circumstances, particularly men, how men, but also mothers. Like, this conversation includes us both. Everyone's come with their own hopes, dreams, and fears, and particular circumstances, understandings, that it's very different. It's very difficult to honestly and critically be generalized about this conversation when we're all living our specific lives.
Indeed. Akili, as a child, you were growing up and your mom and dad were living separately. Did you have any particular thoughts about that? And did those thoughts perhaps change over time?
Well, I did have thoughts about that. I am the oldest of my father's children, his five, and I am my mother's only child. I grew up in Chicago while my father lived in Columbus. Dr. Johnson's, you know. Ohio State, Drake University, a lot to live up to. But I also learned writing this book, Living in the Shade, that with them being separate, I had to live separate lives, I guess, because I have two separate names. Akili is my name. Akili, which in Latin means God planned for me to be intelligent, the name my father gave me. But my mother also calls me Therese. So those two separate names, living in two separate cities, because my father is as active in my life as any man I've ever seen in their children's line. So I sort of developed two separate sides of myself that I guess that's what you're driving at. But
interesting.
I also learned writing the book that you spoke about my mother. I realize now that my mother is the first woman whose eyes I saw my father through. The first person whose eyes I saw my father through other than my own. So important. And she allowed me to develop my relationship with him in a way that was without judgment, without bias, without her own opinion, without her forcing her thoughts on me. And it my relationship with my father is better because of it. So.
That is truly a gift that your
yes.
mom gave to both of you.
Yes, ma'am.
And actually to herself, if you think about it, in terms of not trying to guide you in any particular way, but letting you find your own path towards and with your dad.
Now, what was probably helpful is that I've known his mother since I was 5 years old. I mean, we were in elementary classrooms together. I don't remember which one it was, second, third, fourth grade. We were in the same classroom, so we've known each other the vast majority of our lives.
Yeah.
Akili, let me ask you this. Your name, you were not born. You mentioned the difference between the name you have with your dad and the name you have with your mom.
Yes.
Your name was changed by your dad when you were about 9 years old.
Well, it wasn't changed.
Okay.
But He no longer called me Therese, and he has not called me Therese since that day.
I see.
20 years ago. So, but my mother and my mother's side of the family still call me Therese. My father and his side of the family call me Akili. So, but that was 20 years ago. So,
and it's okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
it's my name.
Okay.
Well, I think, and that's just my whole family. My mother still calls you Therese, though.
She does.
Yeah.
You know, names are so powerful in our lives. Either question to either Dr. Johnson or to Akili, what does your name mean? What does Akili mean?
Akili means God's plan. Akili Uchana means God planned for me to be intelligent.
Ah.
Yes, ma'am.
That is a wonderful name.
I thought so, too.
Okay.
I don't know if he always thought that, Dr. Brewer. He, you know,
he wasn't feeling that so much as a kid, huh, Dr. Johnson?
No, he really wasn't. And I write about that tension has served that tension, while not always positive, has served to resulted in something that would have that's better.
How so?
Because it forced a conversation and exploration in both of us that required us to examine what it is we envision for the future, for our, you know, for his and my and our future, in a way that we probably wouldn't have done without it. And it speaks to this, this notion that you just mentioned earlier about the power of a name. And I was aware of that. I mean, that's why I did what I did with the naming ceremony, because I think it was my way of thinking that, you know, I would give all of my children African names. And that opportunity, because I was only 15 years old, 16 years old when he was born, I don't know that I thought about that until after the my two youngest daughters were born.
Interesting. Akili, anything you want to add?
No, I think he hit it on the head.
He summed it up, huh?
Yeah.
There you go, Dad. You get one in your team.
Don't give me those. So I'll take this one.
Okay. You mentioned Dr. Johnson being a teen parent. And
Sure. Certainly
there are all kinds of stories, ideas, beliefs about teen parents, period, but certainly teen dads, regardless of race, regardless of education, regardless of social standing. For you as a teen dad, what was going on in your head, and how did your family react, Dr. Johnson?
So at the time that he's born, I'm doing all the things that knucklehead young men are doing in big urban cities across the country. I'm involved in gang violence. I'm involved in illegal activity. In fact, at the time, most of the adults who are in my life are probably thinking, this is one of those that are going one of two places, you know, the prison or a cemetery. And that plays a part in him coming here, right? And my mother was she was really upset, obviously upset. But again, and it was complicated because, like I said, Teresa and I were friends since we was 5 years old, which meant that our mothers were friends. And so all of the complexities around that kind of scenario played out in real life that are easier to talk about with two decades behind you than they were in the context of the moment.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? In the context of the moment, those, you know, and I think their friendship suffered because of it. And so, having said that, his coming here invited me, forced me, encouraged me to find my best self, because as a result of him, I went to the service. Because I now, the moment he was born, for whatever reason, I was aware that there was somebody on earth in my life who was more important than me. And that's a heavy thing to understand at 16
Absolutely.
Years old.
Well, there are a lot of people who don't understand that at 60 years old.
Right. And so, no, I agree. And so that played a part in every decision I made after that. I didn't always make the great ones, but now I was aware that, and so part of the reason to go to the service, I was explained that he would receive this support every month, and so it was important to me, because when he was first born, I worked at a barbershop on the corner of 71st and Damon. And I'd sweep the hair up on during the weekend on Saturdays, and that would help me buy Pampers and, you know, that kind of stuff.
And where were you, 71st and Damon, where?
In Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, in Chicago. So, you know, his mother and I lived two doors down from each other.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was beginning to take on the responsibilities of what I thought it meant to be a father. And in fact, I write an actual quote from the book is, when men consent to the challenge and responsibility of fatherhood, they invite the circumstances to grow. And I know that now from a real perspective of what that actually looks like. You know, the thoughts that it invites in you, once you make the first move, Once you have the first understanding, when you say, this is somebody here is more important to me, what you do as a result of that and how you build on that changes who you might have been otherwise.
Absolutely. Dr. Johnson, Akili, we're going to take a break and we will be back in just a moment. Just heard your dad talk about what his life was like as a teenager. What was your life like as a teenager?
Well, as a teenager, my early teenage years, I was living on the south side of Chicago. I went to school there. A lot of the problems that you see now there were, I guess, starting to develop, getting as bad as they are now. But I moved. I left Chicago and moved to Des Moines my junior year of high school with my father. He was at Drake University at the time. Living with him on a day-to-day basis with him in the home, going to school. I had never went to school in the same city with my father before. So, but being around him every day, daily basis, the power of the expectation I felt was great. It was awesome. I didn't always live up to that, and my teenage years are scarred with that, marred with that experience, with me not meeting the challenges I feel now I should have met, which was the biggest reason why I went to live with my father. I wasn't doing so well in school in Chicago. I wasn't as focused as I should have been, and so that was the biggest reason why I lived with him. Went to live with him, but my teenage years were so different from anyone else that I know. Like I said, I lived on the south side of Chicago with all of the chaos that comes with that, but I also had a role model in my life that no one else I knew had.
Let me ask you this, Akili. You were, when you went to live with your dad, now you're living with somebody who, I don't know how many degrees he had by that time, but it was...
He had seven.
You know...
Why are we doing that? Why are we doing that? I don't understand, but okay, go ahead.
What 7 degrees? It's kind of mind-boggling. So dad's addiction is school. Is that what we're saying here? Maybe so. You don't have to answer that one. I don't want to get you in trouble. But, you know, Akili, that's a lot to live up to. That's a lot to try to emulate. That's a lot. And, you know, some children, some people, and those kinds of scenarios will try to be their best, better, and better selves. And other people will say, well, there's just no way I can do that. And they will go the exact opposite direction. Did you fall into either one of those categories?
I feel like I went in the opposite direction.
Okay.
You know, I when I was studying, I was skipping school. When I should have been studying, I was skipping school, and when I should have been paying attention, I wasn't. I went the exact opposite direction, the exact opposite.
It's interesting, Dr. Brewer, that you asked that, because I remember, this is his junior year, and one of the teachers who was a student of mine at the university, she was working on her master's degree. She was trying to become a principal.
Oh, Akili, I am so sorry to hear that. Your teacher was your dad's student? Oh, my goodness. Yes, Dr. Johnson, yeah, so, continue.
Yeah, so the teacher was one of the students of mine. And she came to me one day in confidence at the school, and she said, "Dr. Johnson, you should know something, that your son is telling people that you're the janitor at the university." She said, "I don't know why he's saying that, but I think it's something that you all should talk about."
That you were the janitor?
That I was the janitor.
Okay.
Based off of this conversation, the question you just asked him.
Gotcha, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and so it caused us to have a conversation because I wanted to have the conversation in such a way that I didn't want him to walk away thinking I thought there was a problem with being a janitor, because I don't.
Right.
I don't think there's any problem with people going to work every day.
I hear you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so, but I needed to understand just why he was saying something that wasn't true. Like, you know, there's 175 professors at university, and four of them are black, and only one of them is in the School of Education. I'm trying to figure out why that isn't the story. and he said something to me that I thought was, I don't know if he remembers this, so you'll have to tell me if he does. He told me that the way you're living your life, the way you're living your life doesn't go with the image I have of myself.
Fascinating. Hmm.
And that was a heavy thing for me to hear, right? I mean, because much of that I had accomplished in my life was a direct result of him being born, right? And so we had to have a conversation surrounding that, about what that meant to him, and listening to him. I mean, because writing the book, we had book meetings, so we had to have conversations that we otherwise would not have had, without the book.
That sounds like an encouragement for every parent and child to consider writing a book.
It really does. I mean, mm-hmm. because my favorite book, I don't know if you're going to mention it, but my favorite chapter in the book is Reconciling My Father's Flaws. Hmm. Because, you know, the way life has happened to me, I get affirmed a lot. You know, I spend a lot of my day as Dr. Johnson in a whole range of ways. And however that plays out with my children and other people, but Reconciling My Father's Flaws was a conversation that we had to have. Again, it's another conversation we would have had without it. And listening to other men talk about that chapter, many of them say, "I don't know if I can have that conversation with my son."
Interesting. But it's so critical.
I think so. But, you know, I want to be careful not to every relationship between fathers and sons has its own evaluation and benchmarks that are related to those specific experiences.
That's true.
But I just make that point about that when you asked him that, because the obvious question is then what vision do you have of yourself? Because this ain't make believe, right? This house you're living in is not a cartoon, you know. And so you raise an interesting question that I think is that at 30 years old, maybe he reflects back on that in a way that he would not have done without it.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Johnson. Drawing a quote from your book, you say, "For many fathers, relating to their son is convoluted because it requires them to reconcile with the worst qualities of themselves, while at the same time seeking to imprint the best of what they could have been." That's extraordinary.
And just hearing you say those words conjures something up in me about the complexities of this conversation and the importance of it simultaneously. Because I think that's exactly what fathers have to do. Now, for me, it was a little less complicated because the world affirms me in a way that many black males don't get affirmed. Now, it challenged me in all the ways that black males get challenged. I drove a Mercedes for a few years, and during those years, I got pulled over in that Mercedes more times than I had ever been pulled over in my life before that.
I do believe that.
Right. So in all the ways, I don't want to romanticize this. I'm challenged in all the ways the world challenges, but I get affirmed in ways that few black males get affirmed. Right. And so as you read that quote, right, so I'm the, I'm, the, I'm the, life is happening for me in such a way that I feel like I come in contact with the best of myself on occasion. And the world sometimes meets me in that space. So, but there are lots of black males who have all the abilities and less opportunities than I had, who are not affirmed in that way. And so they have to imagine what the world would be for them if they were given the opportunity to be their best selves and meet that space. And they have to imprint that on their sons from their imagination, not from a lived experience, while simultaneously grappling with what they see as what they're confronted with as the worst of themselves. And those are very complicated realities that I think we need to talk more about. We need to have more real conversations, and hopefully this book invites folks to do that.
And depending on the level of self-esteem and where the depression is and where the anxiety is, certainly has a huge impact on how they see themselves.
Yeah, no question. In fact, I write in the book, much of this has to do with whether or not a man sees his life through hope and possibility or through despair. You know, but those are choices that we make. If we see our lives through despair, then all of the things that are not happening, that are unwelcome, that we prefer not to be happening, we would concentrate on those things. But I submit that any life being lived on this side of the dirt, while those things are always present, there's always a reason to be hopeful and grateful and appreciative of the things that we have that others don't.
Akili? That was a sigh.
Well, would you like me to add to that?
If you would like to.
Wow. I don't know if I have anything to add to that.
So what do you think contributed to you saying that I was a janitor at the university?
Well, at the time I thought I was joking. At the time I thought I was being funny. But I realize now that I said that because living up to the janitor's son was much easier than living up to Dr. Johnson.
Clearly.
At least in your mind.
In my mind it was.
Yeah.
And I guess you say with 15 years behind me, that was the choice I made. But I realize now that it was silly. Why wouldn't I want to be in contact with my best self, as you say that? But I did that because it was infinitely easier to be the son of a janitor.
Would you say, Akili, that it would also make you more acceptable and more believable to your friends?
Oh yes, with the image, what he said, the image that the image of myself I had, yes. It fit better with my friends if my dad was a janitor, yes. The image I portrayed to people. Yes, absolutely, you're right.
So
I would imagine that had to be complicated because so many people knew who I was. I was such a public figure in that community.
Yeah.
How did that play? Your friends didn't know? I don't understand how it's possible.
Well, they knew, but I guess me being from Chicago, me being, you know, cool guy, talked a certain way. I guess they allowed me to live that imagination, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you think they did know that your dad was a professor at Drake?
Sure. Like you said, everybody knew.
Okay.
Everybody knew.
Well, it's possible that some of the kids might not.
Right. No, you're right.
Yeah.
And you know, quite frankly, children are just as good as adults at not seeing what they see and not believing what they don't want to believe is true.
Sure. Sure. No, absolutely. Sure.
All right. We're having an interesting conversation. You're learning even as we talk today.
Sure.
Dr. Johnson, you say as a father, you have to forgive yourself.
Mm.
Of what?
Oh, so many things. In fact, I often talk to my children about this because, they affirm my fatherhood in ways that in some ways warms my heart, but in other ways it does not. So with my son, even though I, given, that's why I write in the book that men have to be the best father they can in the circumstances that they find themselves. No circumstances gives us permission to try less hard. So in the case of my son, the fact of the matter, he was born, I was, you know, 15, 16 years old. There was no way that I was emotionally, spiritually, financially, psychologically prepared to help raise another human being. I just was not. And no set of accomplishments 10 years later could absolve me of that reality, that truth. One, right? And so all I can do then after that is give it, do the best I can. But that did present us with challenges that other fathers and sons would not have had. Now, there were times where I drove to Chicago for parent-teacher conferences for 15, 20 minutes and drove right back to Ohio. There were times we all brought everybody, I brought everybody up for his birthday. I wanted him to be a part of my daily life. There were times where I drove to Chicago and sat in his classrooms all day. You know, he had the experiences that one would have with a father who lived in the house with him, right? But it doesn't change the fact that I did not. It doesn't change that. With my two youngest daughters, although their mother and I was married for nearly 15 years, so they grew up in a house where there was a mother and a father, but we did get divorced. And that has a consequence on their lives, on my life, and I often felt bad because those, in my mind, are epic failures. But again, none of those failures gave me permission to not continue to do the work, and that is to be the best father I could to them. But the failures in my mind were significant, and I had to do a lot of spiritual, emotional, and psychological work to see my way through them.
Akili, what do you think your dad needs forgiveness for?
Well, he might find this interesting, but I don't think I need to forgive my father for anything. I'll phrase that wrong. I don't think he needs my forgiveness for anything. My father has been as good a father as I could imagine him ever being. I'm probably a little upset with him because I'm the most prideful person that I know, and it's probably all his fault. Because he's the most prideful person I know. But if I need to forgive him for anything, it's that. But my father has loved me more than I've loved me my entire life. He doesn't need my forgiveness. So,
well, that's a powerful thing to say, son.
It is indeed. It is indeed. And it certainly sounds like your dad was there more often and in more ways than a lot of dads who live in the same household. I mean, how many dads honestly go to parent-teachers meeting? And if they do go, a lot of times they're kicking and screaming.
Absolutely. I think my father met every teacher I probably ever had.
That's true.
Every teacher I ever had. And he lived in another state. I know some kids who sat next to me in class, their father never met any teacher they ever had. So, you know,
he's dead.
Very good. Yeah, he's been there.
I could say I tried. I would say I tried. That's the best result that I can give. I tried.
Dr. Johnson, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, you make the comment that your pride is your single biggest flaw. And it seems like your son didn't fall far from that tree in his estimation. So when we come back, that is where I would like to pick up.
Sure.
Folks, this is Pamela Brewer. You're listening to Mind Talk and a conversation I am having with Dr. Eric L. Johnson and his son, Akili. They have written a book entitled Living in the Shade, Implications of Father and Son Relationships Explored. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. Okay, gentlemen. Pride. You both have suggested that pride is rather something of an issue for you both. Dr. Johnson, why don't you tackle this one first?
Well, now, I've written a book called 10 Daily Aspects of Pride. Now, in this particular book, though, Living in the Shade, the pride chapter actually belongs to Akili. He wrote more about that than I did.
That does not let you off the hook?
Okay.
You have said that
yes, I did.
This
I did.
Is an issue for you, so how does it show up in your life?
Oh, I mean, it shows up in my life in lots of ways, right? So I define pride as an overestimation of one's ability, knowledge, or importance. And I mentioned this earlier, because I've been affirmed in some very powerful ways in my life. You know, when I was chief of research publications, I probably had 4 or 5 meetings with the Secretary of Defense, 2 of them with the President. I was participating in meetings at the highest level. And in those moments, if you don't pay attention, if you're not doing the work, then you can believe that your individual existence is something more than what it is. And that can show up in lots of ways. And for a smart guy like me, it's easy for me to think I know more than what I actually know.
Did I hear that from your son, too? I mean, did I read that from him as well?
I think he did. I think he did write that in there.
Oh, my. Yeah. You know, the reality, though, is in the situations in which you have found yourself educationally, professionally, and more, you have contributed. And that is something to look at yourself with pride and be proud of the fact of your opportunity to have been able to do that, and in many cases, others' appreciation of what you've done. So I just want to make clear that we're not saying that pride, period, 100%, is a bad thing. There are perhaps levels of pride that we want to be mindful of.
Well, I'll push back a little bit with this. For me, when most people find pride most relevant, me personally, spiritually, I think joy and gratitude are probably more appropriate.
I'll take that.
Because pride invites us to think about ourselves, and oftentimes, whatever we've accomplished, there's been sacrifices of people around us, and those sacrifices have been necessary. And the word I used was necessary for us to achieve those accomplishments. And so nothing any one of us does individually is completely the result of our conscious will and decision-making.
That's true.
Almost everything we accomplish is the result of a whole range of things. Some of them are what we did, but most of them are things that were not in our control.
That's true.
And so gratitude and joy appreciate all the things that could have gone wrong, but didn't.
With a smile.
Yes, with a smile. Sure.
Akili?
Yeah.
Pride.
Well, I push back on his take of pride a little bit, maybe because I like to revel in it a little more than I should.
You're allowed.
But for me, in Christianity, they believe that, well, they preach that pride is the root of sin, and I tend to agree. It is for me the root of all my unhealthy traits, my selfishness, my self-centeredness, all of the negative traits that keep me the center of my world. And so, it's something I struggle with every day. I work on it every day. To be better, but I don't quite know if I believe that pride is all bad. I don't know if it's all good. I think it's here, and all the things that are here for a reason. So I don't quite see it the way my father does, but I think pride serves its purpose in all of our lives.
What about expectation? How does expectation show up in both of your lives, Dr. Johnson?
Well, actually, because Akili writes about that in the book, in a way that I didn't. Maybe you should start, and then let me respond to what you think.
No, you're not getting off the hook.
So I'm always off the hook, but he writes about that, really about...
I'm coming to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
For you, what does the power of expectation mean to you?
This is for me?
This is for Dad.
Okay. Oh, for me. Oh, so I think that it is simultaneously the ability to find our better selves, and it simultaneously has all that is necessary for us to crumble under our perceived overwhelmed anxieties and inadequacies. But expectations are both of those things simultaneously. And how we perceive them is just a matter of how we choose to see our lives. So expectation for me has proven to be something that invites me to be to climb the next mountain. I mean that both literally and figuratively. With one of my younger daughters, I climbed a couple of mountains, and now I run, and running. I run a couple of miles, and I used to couldn't do it. And now when I run a couple of miles and I do 2.5 or 3 miles, now I expect that I can do more. I mean, so, and I use that as a metaphor for the rest of my life, because I'm still tired. I'm still breathing hard. I still hate running. I don't like running, but I like the fact that I live, and running reminds me that I live when I'm tired, when I endure, and when I accomplish something. So expectations are... In our understanding of expectations is the very meaning that we have of our lives, spiritually, mentally, and physically.
Akili?
Well, I don't disagree with anything you said, but I would add that for me, in my life, pride, expectation. In my life, in my early life, whenever I was in this space, closest to my lowest self, I realize now that I was avoiding or running away from expectation. And now, as a 29-year-old man, whenever I come in contact with, I guess, my highest self, I feel like I am attempting to meet those same expectations I ran from. That is the role it plays in my life as of today. Meeting expectations allows me to share space with my higher self.
You know, Akili, you wrote in the book, and again, folks, the name of the book is Living in the Shade, Implications of Father and Son Relationships Explored. Akili, you wrote that your father's expectations have always been that you be a man who was honorable, loyal, respectful, trustworthy, and compassionate. A man. Not an occupation, not a title, not a salary. Can you say more about that?
Well, as I just said about being in space with my lower self, running from expectations, it was because I felt that meeting those expectations meant an occupation, a title, a salary, and the pressure that comes along with that, because there is serious pressure when your father's a doctor or sits on the board of a bank. The expectations of those people are different. I'm not saying that that if your mother's a teacher or works at a bank that you don't have expectations and pressure. I just feel that it's different when your father has DR in front of his name. But as I said, as a 29-year-old man, occupation, title, money, jobs, an office, I don't think those things. I've now come to understand that what he wants from me out of life has nothing to do with those things. It's what you said. It's about the honor, integrity, treating folks nice, being respectful to people who come around me, loving my family, being loyal. So, expectation now contributes with me being my best self every day. So,
you know, I have to say to you both that, if we were living, in my opinion, if we were living in a world where universally what folks valued was honor, loyalty, respect, trustworthiness, and compassion, this would be an entirely different place.
I tend to agree with that. I tend to agree with that. And even in the book, one of the things that I try to tackle is two heavy topics that we haven't addressed in this conversation about this notion of implication of fatherhood, and that's manhood and fatherhood. And I try to write about, I try to grab that topic in such a way that we create some commonalities out of it. Each man will define those terms, fatherhood and manhood, to match the specific circumstance in which his reality allows him to construct a lens for. But even if we all define the terms differently, how they function in our lives, what they encourage and motivate us to do and be, can be things that are similar, but we have to have more serious, critical, and frequent conversations about what we think that means. As men are currently operating, we all are using these terms, and we say them to one another, but we actually mean different things when we say them.
Very true.
And we keep the conversations above what's necessary for us to challenge the other on what we mean by that. And so I try to grab that in the book because I want fathers and sons to have these conversations. No one of us is perfect, right? Every human being who is drawing breath exists between two places. They exist between a place that exists between who we have been and who we want to be, and we should judge accordingly. So I don't want, this is in no way, shape, or fashion some sort of soapbox, but I want to engage in some conversations with other men that invite us to heal, because we bring these unhealthy and bad habits to our relationships with our children, with our partners, with ourselves, and with the world, and that doesn't change just because we want it to. It doesn't change just because we think it ought to. It only changes when we do the work necessary to find a way to share space with our best selves as often as possible, because none of us does it 100% of the time.
Very true. Akili, anything you want to add to that?
Well, I do not, actually.
He did kind of say it all, didn't he? Akili,
yeah.
As we begin to close out our conversation today, I am wondering, Akili, if there's a message that you would give to fathers.
Fathers?
Fathers.
Well, I would hope that any father and son who read this book would come away from it with as much growth as I feel like I have. I feel like there's a real need for this topic to be talked about, and I would hope that any father who read this book will come away from it with a little bit more patience, a little bit more understanding, a little bit more humility about their relationship with their son, because no one has needed it from their father more than me. And so I would hope that any father coming away from this book would at least take that away, take that from it.
Dr. Johnson, what would you say to sons?
Wow. Well, so we leave the book with a... Well, the last chapters in the book are a message to my father and a message to my son. And the message to my son, although that message is to my son specifically, it is from his father to him, I try to write it broad enough where I think many fathers will want to say this to many sons. And I want to encourage him to constantly seek the light, that which highlights his better self to him. And I seek him to accept the challenge that goes with attempting to be a better self and all the things that you have to overcome to do that. And then certainly, lastly, invite him to understand the role and function of love in the life of human beings. Love is the power to connect to all the things that you think are important and the ability to make those things real in your life. And so my message to my son and to, you know, other sons, of which I am one, is to take those three ideas and make them real as often as possible in the space in which we share with other people.
Is there a website for Living in the Shade?
Sure. So the website is strategies to succeed, strategies, the number two, strategies2succeed.biz. And from there, you can get information about living in the shade and 10 daily aspects and all the stuff that we're doing, community stuff. Everything we're doing, you can get more information about from there. Strategies2succeed.biz, B-I-Z, strategies, the number two, succeed.biz.
Wonderful. Gentlemen, it has been such a pleasure to talk with both of you, and you both have written and engaged today in such powerful dialogue. And yes, we have focused on fathers and sons. If we could broaden this out for this to be conversations between people, moms and dads, fathers and daughters, daughters and moms, again, it would be, I suggest, an extraordinarily different place. And so, again, gentlemen, thank you very, very much for your time today and for the work that you do and for the next time you come back on Mind Talk.
Oh, I appreciate that. You know, just as a point, I have sons and daughters, and both my sons and daughters are in the book.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Akili, any final words?
Well, thank you for having us, and I hope that anyone hearing this will go out and check the book out and take from it as much as I grow from it as much as I have.
And again, folks, that website is strategies2, that's the number 2, succeed.biz.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, both very much for joining us on this edition of Mind Talk. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Remember that Mind Talk is available to you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on demand by going to myndtalk.org. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational service. It is not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26x2 Communications. If you would like to get in touch with me directly, you can email me at Pamela, P-A-M-E-L-A, at Mind Talk. Again, that's myndtalk.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, that is exactly what it is. Unacceptable. You take care.